Song, and this is VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Friedel, Brian Lynn, and Dan Novak. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Dan Friedel.
People who make products by hand in Kenya, known as artisans, are concerned about competition from similar goods coming from China. Thousands of people are known for making items they sell at a large market in Nairobi. Joroge Macharia makes stoves, known as jikos, in the local language, Swahili. He said, similar stoves coming from China are hurting his business because they are less costly. Those from China are not better than ours. Ours are really good, said Macharia, who has made stoves for 40 years. Data show Kenya imported nearly $4 billion of goods from China in 2021, but sent out only $1.5 billion to Asia. Magdalene Vivi sells kitchen items. She said non-stick pots that come from outside of Kenya are more popular than the steel or aluminum pots and pans made in Kenya. She said she has not seen non-stick items made in Kenya. A study by the African Union shows that Africa is one of China's largest markets. Mary Wambui is one shopper who said she prefers the less costly items from China. Every time you come here, there is something new that has come up, she said. Wohoro Ndoho is an economics expert in Kenya. He said, a lack of automation technology means most products made by Kenyans are handmade. That means for a product like a bread pan, it takes a Kenyan 1 hour to make the pan. In the same hour, a Chinese factory can make 1,000, he said. The national organization that represents artisans who sell their goods at Kenya's markets says the imports from China are hurting the country's economy. Charles Kalumba is Secretary General of the organization. He said, the people he represents make high-quality stoves that save energy. The stoves coming from China may look the same, but they are a little different. Kenyan leaders are hoping to negotiate a trade agreement that will permit more sales to China. Wilfred Marube is the leader of Kenya's Export Promotion and Branding Agency. He said, China and Kenya made an agreement in January to work together. Now the two nations are working to find a way to open China's market to Kenyan agricultural products. One person who is looking forward to more sales to China is Tiku Shah, who sells high-quality frozen avocados. Shah said the challenge for Kenya is to increase the number of avocados it can grow and send to China, and it's 1.4 billion people. A lot of us are not ready for that scale of business, Shah said. It's a big business on a big scale. It requires a lot of investment, and it requires a very dedicated market focus. In 2020, China ranked 11th on the list of Kenya's export destinations, says National Data. With the new agreements, Kenya hopes to see China rise on that list. I'm Dan Friedel.
Scientists say a huge crater formed by a meteorite strike in present-day Greenland is much older than first thought. The 31-kilometer-wide crater was first discovered in 2015 under thick ice at Greenland's Hiawatha Glacier. The ice covering the crater, called an ice sheet, is about 1 kilometer deep. The crater remained hidden until it was identified by radar equipment and scientists decided to investigate. At first, researchers estimated the massive hole might have formed about 2.6 million years ago, or even as recently as 13,000 years ago. But they announced March 9th that new dating methods suggested the crater is about 58 million years old. The researchers said they based their findings on dating methods that measured the breakdown of radioactive material. Their results were recently released in a study in the publication Science Advances. The new information suggests the strike happened about 8 million years after an asteroid hit an area in Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula. That climate-changing event is blamed for causing the disappearance of more than 70% of Earth's plant and animal life. All dinosaurs that were not bird-like disappeared. At the time the meteorite hit Greenland, it was not the icy place it is today. It is believed to have been covered with rainforests populated with plant and animal life that followed the disappearance of most of the dinosaurs. Researchers say the meteorite released millions of times more energy than an atomic bomb, leaving a crater big enough to swallow the city of Washington, D.C. Gavin Kenny is with Sweden's Museum of Natural History and was the lead writer of the study. He told Reuters that forceful air from the event would have knocked down most trees within tens to hundreds of kilometers. In addition, an explosion from the strike would have set trees on fire and caused widespread forest fires. Michael Story, with Denmark's Natural History Museum, was a co-writer of the study. He said the new information does not provide clear evidence that the impact had long-lasting effects on world climate. But, Story added, he thinks such effects were unlikely. Kenny noted that these kinds of strikes only happen every few million years. So, he said, we don't need to be very worried about such an impact happening anytime soon. I'm Brian Lynn.
Major school districts around the United States are permitting students to attend class without face coverings for the first time in nearly 2 years. The rules relating to face coverings, or masks, have caused fights among educators, school boards, and parents throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. New York City is the largest school district in the country. It ended its mask requirement on March 7th. Philadelphia lifted its school mask requirements on March 9th. It joined other big cities such as Houston and Dallas that made similar moves in the past week. Chicago schools ended their mask requirement Monday. Parents, teachers, and school leaders all must balance the new rules. Some families are happy that their children no longer have to wear masks, but others say they are still worried and are urging their children to continue wearing face coverings for now. Educators are caught in the middle. In Anchorage, Alaska, top school official Dina Bishop says lifting the mandate in the city's nearly 100 public schools was a welcome change. She said there were months of arguments over masks. "So I'm glad that we've taken that fight away, and now we can go back to focus on learning," Bishop said. Falling COVID-19 infection rates and new federal health recommendations are leading states to drop the requirements. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recently issued new guidelines saying most healthy Americans, including students, can safely stop wearing masks. But those who disagree about ending school mask requirements often point to low vaccination rates among American children. Only about 25% of children ages 5 to 11 have been fully vaccinated against the coronavirus. Just 58% of children ages 12 to 17 are vaccinated, the CDC says. New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Illinois, and Delaware recently lifted their statewide school mask requirements. New Jersey and Rhode Island officially dropped theirs last Monday. California, Oregon, and Washington all dropped their statewide mandates on March 12th. In many places, the decisions are being made at the local school district level. Officials in many large cities, such as Boston, Los Angeles, and Washington, D.C., have said they will keep mask rules for now. Officials say that could change if vaccination rates rise among their students or if they can reach agreements with teachers' unions. Unions have been strong supporters of keeping the mask requirements in place. Chicago schools announced last week that masks will no longer be required starting March 14th. The city's teachers' union then promised to take officials to court. They said the move will break an agreement with the district to keep the mask rule through the end of the school year. In New York City, elementary school student Jack Jalali stopped wearing his mask when they became optional. "For children, it's really great because you can see the way words are pronounced and you can see spellings," said Jack's mother, Andrea. But third grade student Derek Carter Jacob kept his mask on even after New York removed the requirement. "Leave it on. There's no reason for him to take it off until basically everybody is safe," said his parent, Michael Jacob. John Bracey is a Latin teacher at Belmont High School near Boston, Massachusetts. He said he will keep wearing his mask through the end of the academic year, even if district officials decide to end the mandate. "I have major concerns on so many levels," Bracey said. "I just can't find a public health or moral justification for removing them." Melissa Bellow is a parent in Needham, Massachusetts, outside Boston. She said her two children were among those who happily removed their masks last week. She said her 8-year-old son has hearing loss and has had trouble understanding what people are saying when they wear masks. "He's working harder every day in school and coming home more tired," Bello said. "There's not enough consideration for those kinds of trade-offs in these mask mandates." I'm Dan Novak.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. The United States entered the Second World War in December of 1941. Europe had already been at war since 1939, but the United States did not enter World War II until Japanese forces attacked the American naval base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. The attack was a surprise, but American military and political leaders had believed that the United States, sooner or later, would be pulled into the fighting, and they began to prepare for war. President Franklin Roosevelt had been Assistant Secretary of the Navy under President Woodrow Wilson during World War I. He remembered how American troops were not ready for that war. Now that he was president, Roosevelt wanted to be sure that the United States would be ready when it had to fight. Throughout 1941, Roosevelt urged American industries to produce more weapons and other military supplies. He established new government agencies to work with industry to increase arms production. Some business leaders resisted Roosevelt's efforts. They felt there was no need to produce more arms while the United States was still at peace. But many others cooperated, and by the time Japan attacked Pearl Harbor, the American economy was producing millions of guns and other weapons. Still, this was not enough to fight a war. After the Japanese attack, Roosevelt increased his demands on American industry. He called for 60,000 warplanes, 45,000 tanks, and 20,000 anti-aircraft guns. And he wanted all these within 1 year. A month after the Pearl Harbor raid, Roosevelt organized a special committee to direct military production. He created another group to help companies find men and women for defense work. And he established a new office where the nation's best scientists and engineers could work together to design new weapons. These new government organizations faced several problems. Sometimes factories produced too much of one product and not enough of another. Sometimes tools broke, and some business owners refused to accept government orders. But the weapons were produced, and American troops soon had the guns and supplies they needed. The federal government had to quickly expand its own workforce to meet war needs. Federal spending increased from $6 billion in 1940 to $89 billion in 1944. That was 15 times as much spending in just 5 years. Roosevelt had to take strong steps to get the money for all this spending. He put limits on wages. He increased income taxes to as much as 94% on portions of incomes over $200,000. And he asked the American people to lend money to the federal government. The people answered by purchasing almost $100 billion in war bonds. The great increase in public spending raised the threat of high inflation. Roosevelt created a special office with the power to control prices. Many Americans agreed with the idea of price controls, but every business wanted somebody else's prices controlled, not their own. Federal officials had to work hard to keep prices and supplies under control. They restricted how much meat, fuel, and other goods people could buy. The price control program generally worked. Its success kept the American economy strong to support the troops fighting in Europe and Asia. One reason these strong economic steps worked was because most of the American people fully supported the war effort.
She's the part of the assembly line. She's making history, working for victory. Rosie, the riveter, keeps a sharp lookout for sabotage. Sitting up there on the fuselage, that little friend can do more than a myth and do. Rosie, the riveter, Rosie's got a boyfriend, Charlie. Charlie, he's the Marine. Rosie is protecting Charlie, working overtime on the riveting machine. When they gave her a production lead, she was as proud as a girl could be. There's something true about red, white, and blue about Rosie, the riveter.
You can look at photographs of people from those times and see in their faces how strongly they felt. In one picture from the state of North Carolina, a group of men are standing in front of old rubber tires. They are planning to give the tires to the Army to be fixed and used for military vehicles. Another photo shows a woman visiting a hospital. She is singing to a soldier to lift his spirits. Still another photo shows a man who owns a small food store. He is placing signs on meat and cans of food to tell people how much they are allowed to buy. You can also get an idea about the feelings of the times by the names of some of the popular songs during World War II. In addition to Rosie the Riveter, there were songs like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition. One of the most hopeful songs was this one, recorded by Britain's Vera Lynn. Americans supported the war. A small number refused to fight because of religious or moral beliefs. They were known as conscientious objectors. And some Americans supported Adolf Hitler and other fascists. But almost everyone else wanted to win the war quickly and return to a normal life. Many Japanese Americans served with honor in the United States Armed Forces. But many Americans were suspicious of anyone whose family had come from Japan. They refused to trust even Japanese American families who had lived in the United States for more than a century. Many banks refused to lend money to Japanese Americans. Many stores would not sell to them. The federal government relocated thousands of Japanese Americans in California and other states into internment camps. They were released only after the war ended. It was many years before the government officially apologized for mistreating Japanese Americans. But World War II did lead to progress for another group that was often the target of discrimination, Black Americans. Black leaders spoke out. They said it was unfair to fight a war for freedom in Europe while Black Americans did not have all the same freedoms as white citizens.
Negroes want the same things that white citizens possess. All of their rights, and no force under the sun can stem and block and stop this civil rights revolution which is now underway.
In 1941, a leader in the Black community, A. Philip Randolph, threatened to lead a giant march on Washington for civil rights for Blacks. President Roosevelt reacted by issuing an order that made it a crime to deny Blacks a chance for jobs in defense industries. He also ordered the armed forces to change some of their rules that discriminated against Black service members. Blacks made progress in the military and defense industries. But most other industries still refused to give them an equal chance. Major progress on civil rights would not come until the 1950s and 60s. Life was busy during the war years. There were many changes in the economy, business, music, race relations, and other areas. But in many ways, life continued as it always does. Americans did what they could during the hard years of World War II to keep life on the home front as normal as possible. But almost everyone understood that the first job was to support the troops overseas and win the war. This strength of purpose at home gave American soldiers the support they needed, and it also helped President Roosevelt as he negotiated with other world leaders. Diplomacy and foreign relations became much more complex during the war.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.